This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. President Donald Trump, in remarks to the UN General Assembly session Tuesday, took aim at Iran's leadership for sowing chaos, death, and destruction, and spreading mayhem across the Middle East and beyond.
The Iranian people are rightly outraged that their leaders have embezzled billions of dollars from Iran's treasury, seized valuable portions of the economy, and looted the people's religious endowments, all to line their own pockets and send their proxies to wage war. Not good.
And he defended the decision to withdraw from the 2015 International Nuclear Agreement with Tehran and reimpose graduated sanctions.
Additional sanctions will resume November 5th, and war will follow. And we are working with countries that import Iranian crude oil to cut their purchases substantially.
Mr. Trump said the world's chief sponsor of terrorism cannot be allowed to possess the planet's most dangerous weapons, and called for Iran's isolation as long as its aggression continues. In his remarks to the General Assembly, Iran's President Hassan Rouhani denounced the hostile U.S. policy intended to overthrow his government. He said there's no better way than dialogue, but that can only begin with an end to what he called threats and unjust sanctions, talks based on equality, he said, justice, integrity, honor, and international law. The president of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Joseph Kabila, also told the UN Security Council, rather General Assembly, that oft-delayed elections scheduled for December will be peaceful and credible. Mr. Kabila said despite enormous challenges, the decision to hold elections is irreversible. He described the political situation as becoming more predictable and transparent. The DRC leader is constitutionally barred from seeking a third term. This is VOA News. During his address to the General Assembly session, President Donald Trump denounced the policies of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and called for a restoration of democracy.
Today we are announcing additional sanctions against the repressive regime, targeting Maduro's inner circle and close advisors.
The Venezuelan leader accused the U.S. of waging economic war, but held out hope for a face-to-face meeting with his American counterpart. A group of Latin nations, meanwhile, is presenting a complaint Wednesday to the International Criminal Court accusing the Maduro government of rights abuses. Pope Francis, beset by sex abuse scandals in several countries involving the church, Tuesday said it has spared no effort to tackle the problem. Speaking aboard the papal aircraft after visiting the Baltic countries, Francis said as long as there is one priest who abuses a child, this is monstrous because young people are scandalized by such corruption. And he acknowledged the scandal threatens to drive away many of the faithful. The Pope also defended the agreement with China on the appointment of bishops, insisting he, not Beijing, will have the final say on who is selected. American comedian Bill Cosby was taken from a courtroom in Pennsylvania in shackles after being sentenced Tuesday to 3 to 10 years in prison for sexual assault. The 81-year-old Cosby, once known as America's Dad on television, was found guilty in April on 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault for drugging and assaulting one-time friend Andre Constand in 2004. Criminal defense attorney R.J. Manuelin said he's not surprised.
Given the fact that there were a lot of victims that came forward to ask for more severe time in prison for Cosby. So from that aspect of it, it doesn't surprise me. However, if Bill Cosby wasn't as famous as he was, if he was a regular person, it actually may have worked in his advantage. And the reason why it may have worked in his advantage is because there's a political aspect to this, to the sentencing. And the political aspect is they're sending a message that not anybody is above the law, including Bill Cosby.
Cosby also was designated a sexually violent predator and must undergo counseling as well as register as a sex offender. Ethiopian authorities arrested hundreds after violence erupted in and around the capital that left nearly 30 dead. The violence targeted minority groups, including ethnic Oromos, around the time of their return of exiled members of the Oromo Liberation Front. The U.S. Tuesday warned Canada it's not making concessions needed to reach a new trade agreement, including access to the country's highly protected dairy market and how best to settle trade disputes. The Asian Development Bank has warned that trade conflict, rising interests, and debt will likely dampen growth in the Asia-Pacific region. It expects regional growth to slip to 5.8% next year. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Wednesday, September 26th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. President Donald Trump addresses the 73rd U.N. General Assembly yesterday, echoing U.S. isolationism.
The United States will not tell you how to live or work or worship. We only ask that you honor our sovereignty in return.
Malawi's president calls for reform of the United Nations. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa praises the United Nations for declaring a Nelson Mandela decade of peace. South Sudan's president decrees a committee to begin the process of implementing the pre-transitional period. And Rwandan President Paul Kagame, current African Union chair, touts positive developments in Africa.
The trend on our continent is toward closer and more productive cooperation, both through the African Union and our regional economic communities.
A South Sudanese surgeon wins the prestigious Nansen Refugee Award, and East African lawmakers want compensation for families who lost loved ones in the Tanzania ferry accident. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Donald Trump Tuesday addressed the ongoing 73rd session of the U.N. General Assembly in New York. Part of his speech highlighted his administration's domestic achievements and his policy of U.S. isolationism.
In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true. Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay. America's economy is booming like never before. Since my election, we've added $10 trillion in wealth. The stock market is at an all-time high in history, and jobless claims are at a 50-year low. African American, Hispanic American, and Asian American unemployment have all achieved their lowest levels ever recorded. We've added more than 4 million new jobs, including 500,000 manufacturing jobs. We have passed the biggest tax cuts and reforms in American history. We've started the construction of a major border wall, and we have greatly strengthened border security. We have secured record funding for our military, $700 billion this year, and $716 billion next year. Our military will soon be more powerful than it has ever been before. In other words, the United States is stronger, safer, and a richer country than it was when I assumed office less than 2 years ago. We are standing up for America and for the American people, and we are also standing up for the world. This is great news for our citizens and for peace-loving people everywhere. We believe that when nations respect the rights of their neighbors and defend the interests of their people, they can better work together to secure the blessings of safety, prosperity, and peace. Each of us here today is the emissary of a distinct culture, a rich history, and a people bound together by ties of memory, tradition, and the values that make our homelands like nowhere else on earth. That is why America will always choose independence and cooperation over global governance, control, and domination. I honor the right of every nation in this room to pursue its own customs, beliefs, and traditions. The United States will not tell you how to live or work or worship. We only ask that you honor our sovereignty in return.
That's U.S. President Donald Trump speaking Tuesday at the ongoing 73rd session of the U.N. General Assembly in New York. Rwandan President Paul Kagame, current chair of the African Union, focused his speech yesterday at the 73rd U.N. General Assembly on what he called the positive developments in Africa. He said Africa's past divisiveness, conflicts and dysfunction has often left the continent unable to articulate and advance its common interest. But, Mr. Kagame said, while some serious problems remain in other parts of Africa, recent developments in the Horn of Africa have given hope that Africa may be on the road to taking charge of its own destiny.
The trend on our continent is toward closer and more productive cooperation, both through the African Union and our regional economic communities. The effect has been to focus Africa's attention on the urgent need to get our house in order and fundamentally change how we do business. This year also provided examples of regional security affairs and key political transitions being handled in a peaceful and forward-looking manner. More effective consultation and leaders and leadership is reducing the need for external mediation, and this is how it should be. The momentous developments in the Horn of Africa, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Djibouti, and even Somalia, are the most remarkable. The region's leaders deserve our full support as they set aside decades of mistrust and work toward a comprehensive settlement. It is important for the United Nations Security Council to collaborate closely with the African Union to accompany this process of normalization. In Zimbabwe as well, the next stages on the country's path of progress warrant steady encouragement from the international community. However, there are other situations in Africa, notably the Central African Republic, Libya, the Sahel, and South Sudan, where serious problems remain unresolved despite so much potential. Africa and the world should come together and do what needs to be done to harmonize overlapping initiatives and ensure that agreements are respected.
That's Rwandan President Paul Kagame, current chair of the African Union, speaking Tuesday at the 73rd UN General Assembly in New York. Malawi President Arthur Peter Mutharika has paid tribute to the late Kofi Annan, the first UN Secretary General from Black Africa, who was laid to rest early this month in his native Ghana. President Mutharika said the late Kofi Annan was a voice of peace and a conscience and moral arbiter of the world. The Malawian leader reiterated Africa's position, calling for a reform of the United Nations. He accused the global body of hypocrisy for preaching global democracy while resisting internal reforms.
We strongly support the common African position, calling for 2 permanent seats with veto and 5 non-veto permanent seats for Africa. Why should some nations be afraid of losing power by offering decision-making space to Africa when you don't lose power by accommodating other continents? Is Africa that much of a threat? This segregation of Africans must come to an end. Why should you allow this organization to be accused of hypocrisy that will preach democracy everywhere when we're not democratic enough to accommodate almost 1/3 of our own membership in this assembly? Madam President, let me conclude by commending the ironic wisdom in the theme we chose this year. Let us prove that we can live up to the demands of the theme. We cannot talk about shared responsibility while we marginalize Africans and deny them full participation in our decisions. We cannot talk about global leadership of the nations when African leadership is not on the decision-making tables. In any political system, we cannot claim relevance to the people that we deny. Our time has come to make the United Nations relevant to all people. Our time has come to show global leadership that's inclusive of all nations. Our time has come to pledge shared responsibilities together with Africa and the rest of the world. And a time has come for this assembly to listen to the voice of Africa. Let us listen.
That was Malawian President Arthur Peter Mutharuka speaking Tuesday at the 73rd UN General Assembly in New York City. Today is Wednesday, September 26th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa thanked world leaders Tuesday for convening a UN peace summit to honor the memory of the late former South African President Nelson Mandela. The summit adopted a declaration that recognizes the period 2019 to 2028 as the Nelson Mandela Decade of Peace. The declaration calls for doubling efforts to pursue international peace and security, development and human rights. President Ramaphosa said the declaration represents a new and sincere commitment to comprehensively advance peace and security and resolve all conflicts and wars.
The UN has been a force of hope for the oppressed, exploited, and poor people around the world. During the dark days of colonialism and apartheid, we drew strength, inspiration, and encouragement from the UN and its charter in our quest for freedom and self-determination. With the support of the UN, we as South Africans were able 24 years ago to bring an end to the nightmare of apartheid. Nelson Mandela led us to freedom and gave us the great opportunity to transform our country. We have now embarked on a journey of transformation, and we are making progress to deal with the ugly legacy of the past system of apartheid. Madiba's vision continues to guide us as we seek to improve the lives of our people in many respects, amongst others through improving the educational outcomes of our youth and transforming our economy that was constituted to serve the interests of a few. We have started a comprehensive dialogue on the question of land reform in our country, which is guided by our constitution and the rule of law, as we seek ways to ensure that the land is shared amongst all who work it, as set out in our Freedom Charter. To the poor, vulnerable and marginalized, the UN today is a beacon of promise in a landscape of doubt. To billions across the world, the UN is the most powerful instrument we possess to achieve a more equal, more humane, as well as a more inclusive world.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa speaking Tuesday at the ongoing UN General Assembly in New York. This year's winner of the UN Refugee Agency's prestigious Nansen Award is South Sudanese surgeon Evan Atta Adaha. He is being honored for 2 decades of life-saving medical work on behalf of thousands of refugees and internally displaced. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
Evan Atta Adaha gave up a relatively comfortable life as a surgeon in Egypt to dedicate the past 20 years to helping thousands of people victimized by war and persecution in Sudan and South Sudan. His services have never been more in demand, as South Sudan's civil war, which is in its 5th year, has forced nearly 4.4 million people to flee their homes as refugees or internally displaced. He runs the only functional hospital in northeastern South Sudan, serving Bunj, a town of more than 200,000 people. Attar says he treats everyone, regardless of who they are. He adds he is most happy when his work has saved somebody from suffering or has saved his life. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balosh tells VOA that Atta's hospital is surrounded by an active active conflict zone. He says the doctor works under very difficult and dangerous conditions, providing medical services to a desperate population.
The only line of defense he has is his reputation and his humanitarian work. Luckily, so far, his work has been respected by all sides. His clinic is open for all sides, whoever needs his assistance.
According to Balash, Attar's team carries out an average of 58 operations per week in difficult conditions with limited supplies and equipment. He says the doctor is on call at all hours and is known to sleep only 1 hour a day on occasion. He says Attar's personal sacrifice to his mission is huge. He says the South Sudanese surgeon lives in a canvas tent near the hospital and visits his family in Nairobi, Kenya, 3 times a year. The Nansen Award is named after Norwegian explorer, scientist, diplomat, humanitarian, and Nobel Peace Laureate Fridtjof Nansen. It recognizes individuals who go beyond the call of duty in pursuit of humanitarian work. The award includes a commemorative medal and a $150,000 prize. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir Tuesday decreed the establishment of a committee for the implementation of the pre-transitional period arrangements. This is in line with the revitalized peace agreement signed earlier this month in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. Information Minister Michael Makuei says the committee will work in collaboration with other bodies to implement the activities of the transitional period.
This is the body that will be working in collaboration with the incumbent Tigono, so that the activities which are earmarked for the transitional period are implemented in time. This is the body that will plan, and this is the body that will take charge of the funding and everything.
The agreement signed in Khartoum called for giving women 35%. But this committee you put together, I think I see the name of only one woman. What happened to the rest of the 35%?
No, this is misreading of the provisions of the agreement. It doesn't talk of even in the technical committees, women must be represented, no. It talks of representation in the executive and the legislature only, not even in the civil service, because civil service is done by competence. These are committees which are set up, and these are committees which are doing the job. The fact that there is one woman, that woman is there because she was nominated by her party.
Minister, this whole process of this pre-transitional process, is it on track or is this process falling behind?
The order which was issued today by the president, it was after the receipt of nominees from the other parties. In that list, there are 5 from the Tigono and 5 from the opposition group. And within the opposition group, there are 2 from the IO, there is 1 from the SOA, there is 1 from the FDs, and there is 1 from other opposition parties. These are the 10 who were appointed, and those groups did submit their nominees to the president, and the president issued the order accordingly. As for other institutions which are not established, take, for example, the IBC. The IBC is a body that will be established in collaboration with the IGAD and the parties and the stakeholders. All these groups will have to make their recommendations. You come to the TBC will solely be established by IGAD. And all these are supposed to be done within the 14 days, and the 14 days are ending tomorrow. However, His Excellency the President has done his part. He has done what he is supposed to do. The rest are not his, and as such, we are waiting to see how far will IGAD conform with also with the provisions of this agreement. The TBC was supposed to be established within 7 days from the date of signature by IGAD. They have not done it up to now.
President Salva Kiir invited Riek Machar to Juba while this transitional process is being worked out. Riek Machar turned that down. Does the president feel disappointed?
Well, so far I have not heard whether he has turned it down or not, but the president told him that he invited him just to come and attend the celebration together with other colleagues, and they will be free to go back and wait up to the beginning of the transitional period.
We are talking now about pre-transitional period, but yet every day we hear about fighting and somebody attacking somebody's positions. That is very worrying.
Well, of course, this is simply because the agreement, the security workshop is being held now in Khartoum. And in that security workshop, the parties are supposed to inform the workshop about their forces, their positions, their deployment, their armaments, and so forth. Some of these groups have no even a single base to mention. So they are actually trying their level best to capture at least a village, if possible, so that they can say, yes, our forces are here. Some of these organizations have not even contact with their forces on the ground, and as such, they might have not even heard of the agreement.
Minister, why is President Salva Kiir not at the United Nations General Assembly? Why is he not there?
He is not there because he was attending to this. He attended the signing ceremony, and they also went to Khartoum and in order to go and meet these opposition groups. So this is why he did not go. He preferred to look into national issues rather than leaving national issues and going to the National Assembly, which is just for talking. But here is more productive than going there. This is why he decided to send his first vice president to go and attend the General Assembly on his behalf.
Michael Mankwe, South Sudan's Information Minister, you're speaking with me from the capital, Juba. East African lawmakers have called on the Tanzanian government to compensate the families who lost their loved ones when a ferry sank last week on Lake Victoria, killing 225 people. Moses Xavier Rimana reports from Arusha, Tanzania.
As the search mission on the missing passengers of the ferry that sank in Lake Victoria last week continues, the Tanzanian authorities said that 227 bodies so far have been recovered after almost a week since the search operation started. The East African Legislative Assembly has called on the Tanzanian government to compensate families of those who perished in the disaster. Simon Bugua is a Kenyan lawmaker.
Fathers were lost, mothers were lost, Mr. Speaker. Children were lost, and these people, they did not know that their day had come. My request is for these people to be adequately compensated, the people who lost lives. My appeal to the government of Tanzania.
Tanzania's government launched an inquest into the cause of the ferry disaster. A preliminary investigation found that overloading was the main reason why the MV Nyerere overturned last Thursday. Almost 300 people were believed to be on the ferry, which had a capacity of 101 passengers. Susan Nakauki, a member of the East African Legislative Assembly, said that little has been done since early 90s when the same kind of tragedy happened.
So many fishermen who've perished in the lakes, whose statistics has not been compiled up to today. It's long overdue. You can't have incidents happening over and over and over again and no action has been taken.
This is not the first time such a disaster happened. In May 1996, a Tanzanian passenger and cargo ferry MV Bukoba capsized with more than 800 people were believed to have drowned, according to a toll released by the Red Cross. Susan Kolimba is the Tanzania's Deputy Minister for Foreign Affairs and East African Community.
The commission is already formed. A lot of measures have been taken, and the investigation is going on. Whoever is responsible for this tragedy, from lower level to higher level, the measures will be taken by the government. I want to assure you and to assure this assembly.
However, Ugandan lawmaker Susan Nakauki believes Tanzanian authorities should do more.
It's not just enough to say we are going to put people in jail. The people who lost their lives are breadwinners for their families. We should devise a compensation mechanism where families are compensated for this loss of lives.
Every year, between 3,000 and 5,000 fishermen die in violent storms on the lake, according to the Red Cross figures. The search mission is still continuing on Lake Victoria as the Tanzanian government managed to rescue 41 people from the estimated 300 passengers. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
And that's it for this Wednesday, September 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I am James Botti, Washington, wishing you a very good Wednesday.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, world leaders gather in New York for the 2018 UN General Assembly. The theme of this year's debate, making the UN relevant to all people. Discussing the 73rd session of the UN General Assembly on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.